requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue unless otherwise noted. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday at 4:30 p.m. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Feet to Fire campaign and protest on Wednesday, January 15th, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Multnomah County Courthouse in Portland. The Feet to Fire campaign is part of a national campaign started by Protect Our Stolen Treasures out of Detroit. This peaceful protest happens every month outside of a different county courthouse and calls for justice for those lost to police violence and hate crimes, particularly those who were in a mental health crisis when they were killed by police. Again, that's Feet to the Fire campaign and protest on Wednesday, January 15th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Multnomah County Courthouse, 1021 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO FM 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany, and KBOO.FM via the World Wide Web. Today is we are broadcasting on January 13th, 2020. My name is Cecil Prescott. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And those will be the numbers that you will tap into, touch, to participate in our morning conversation. Those of you who are listening live might have heard the Democracy Now! Program that airs prior to the morning talk shows here on KBOO. Democracy Now! Is on KBOO in the morning at 7 and in the afternoon at 4 p.m. It's an opportunity to hear news that you certainly you may not hear in other media platforms. I'm grateful for the analysis and the way in which Amy Goodman and her staff research and share the news that we need to know. While listening to one segment of that, I was reminded in the segment was in which the former Chief of Staff of Secretary of State Colin Powell, Colonel Lawrence Wilkinson, was talking about endless war and the American Empire. I thought back to a peace prayer vigil I attended last week in Southeast Portland, and also was reflecting on an interview I heard here on KBOO last week with Dan Handelman. And both the interview and going to that peace prayer vigil last week, I thought, you know, this is really, we are in endless war. I thought back to 1990, 1991, where as I looked around that room where the peace prayer vigil was being held, I looked around and, you know, 30 years ago, maybe we are a little bit slower, a little grayer, but some of those same people who stood and vocalized their opposition to war in 1991, who stood up and gave voice to peace, were gathered in that room. Happens not only in the beginning of 1991, but when the second George Bush was president, and the war that began following the 9/11. So in 2002, 2003, people stood up against the endless war. Now in 2020, we continue to stand up against the endless war. Colonel Wilkinson, in his remark, in his interview this, with on Democracy Now, said, how do we are no longer abiding by things that we stood for, and he, as a professional soldier, believed in the values of international law, he said, and principles that he was taught and believed in terms of how war should be conducted. Not only war, but also diplomacy in terms of international law. He remarked and said that we're no longer, we meaning the United States, no longer abide by the international law, by the law of the jungle. And certainly we, if we take time to reflect on these things, we realize that it seems as if we are in endless war. I'm interested in hearing what some of the president's supporters who probably voted for the president because he spoke out during his first campaign for president against endless war and how we should get beyond that, how he was so easily seduced, and Colonel Wilkinson spoke about that, by the machinery of war, which captured the imagination and apparently the will of people who sit in the office of the presidency. And so there's endless war. A question I have for you today is, where do we go from here? What do you think where do you think we are headed? And particularly in terms of, is there a way to effectively resist this endless war machine? And the endless continuing march of the American Empire. What do you think, where are we headed? And so you might want to share some of your thoughts about that. Moving from the international and national level, another issue is the here in the city of Portland in 2020, we are uniquely situated in the election campaign, in election in 2020, that four of the five city council seats will probably are open. The seat of mayor is open. The seat of Commissioner Udaly will be open. The seat of Amanda Fritz, and she's retiring, will be open. And the seat of the recently deceased Commissioner Nick Fish will be open. Mayor Wheeler and Commissioner Udaly probably running again for their office, but all four of the five seats will be contested. What are the issues that are important to you? What type of campaign should be won? And whether or not the form of government is one in which we should consider to change. You might be aware that the City Club of Portland recently hired the communities of color to gouge Portland's interest in changing the form of government, and depending upon what results from that study, in addition to the four of the five commissioner seats being open, Portlanders might also vote this year on the form of government. Do you have any thoughts on that? And lastly, Oscar is so white. You know, the nominations were revealed today, and just saw a few of them, but it's very white and very male, but, you know, I guess things don't change. So, from the profound to the not-so-important, Endless War, Portland City Council, and the Oscars. Oh, you might have something else. Celeste is just making faces at me.
No, I'm not making faces at you. Good morning, everyone. I'm chuckling and tittering and snorting because, you know, as I was listening to the Democracy Now! This morning, and then you were giving a breakdown about what it feels like to still be protesting war after having heard promises, and, you know, promises sometimes are nothing more than exercises mm-hmm. of the mouth.
Yes.
And still doing that, and as you said, being a little older, slower, and grayer, I'm chuckling because we're ignoring a couple of basic things that we hear out of history and out of human experience, accumulated human experience, and that be those who do not learn from the mistakes of history are often doomed to repeat them. And the fact that endless war is a feature in many of the apocalyptic or post-apocalyptic or just, you know, future views that we've had in literature catches me. It kind of something that pops right into my mind, and I think of some of the novels that I've read in which you see war being propagated, whether it be something like Brave New World, or be 1984, be Animal Farm, you know, Lord of the Flies, or whatever.
Yes.
You know, the fact that we don't learn from it. I'm not surprised that somebody like our current president is propagating war. I don't think he was seduced by any power, because if you track his history, he's not been known as a beneficent leader by any means. He's not been known as an honest person for any means. And I think that's one reason why many people from the moderate to the extreme left politically have looked at him as, well, you know, broken, or, you know, bad goods or damaged goods or whatever you want to say.
Yes.
Most nicely, I could say an inefficient leader.
Mm-hmm.
As for us looking at history and forgetting that this country was based on two things, and they happened concurrently, but if you stop and think about it, they didn't happen necessarily as separately as we want to believe. And one of them is escape for religious freedom and to escape persecution. And the other was for corporate profit, mm-hmm. you know. And even though these two parallel actions or dynamics occurred, and they supposedly, or at least, you know, philosophically, were supposed to be different, in many ways they weren't. As it turns out, when the first settlers got here, they couldn't survive on their own, and so they had to form alliances, and they had to barter. And one of the things they bartered with was their own history and philosophy and whatever goods and knowledge they had, and that's what they bartered with to keep their settlement alive. Then you've got, in some of the same geographic areas, but most definitely in the same time period, people coming over with the idea that they're going to capitalize on whatever's here and make a profit off of it, and, you know, expand the career, not career, what am I trying to say, expand the corporate mm-hmm. idea.
Yes.
And so, you know, we've had war coming with us everywhere we go, and I say we as a species, but in truth, it's not always every culture that brings war. It's mm-hmm. just a species of human being. So, you know, from the very beginning, this is what we do. This is what we do. The real question is, as we look at potential for rebuilding it, are we going to be honest with ourselves and put in some safeguards? And how do we even come together and create a common vision for what those safeguards are going to be? How are we going to create a system of accountability to activate those safeguards? You know, are we going to be honest with ourselves? You were saying from the profound, and my mind went from the profound to the profane, because I'm thinking of Joker, because I almost wanted to talk about the fact that the movie Joker was nominated, or the actor even, because it says a lot about where we are in society mm-hmm. now, and we're looking at a person who, if you take it in his most lightest, fluffiest, meringuest, you know, interpretation, it's about a Charlie Chaplin type figure caught in the wheels of modern life.
Yes.
You know, but if you look at it with all of this darkness that we seem to love so much in every aspect of our entertainment, mm-hmm. you know, it's murder and mayhem.
Yes.
You know, and what you've got is a corporate pawn turned loose. You've got somebody who's been shaped and beaten and retooled and turned loose to be the monster that they became. You know, mm-hmm. there's a line that a singer says in the songs, look at the monster you made, mm-hmm. you know. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, well, we got the monster mentality in the White House, and we got the monster mentality in the movies, and really, what's the difference?
So the movie Joker is a metaphor for
it
where
could
we are
be.
Today.
I mean, mm-hmm. that's how I think. I look at things, yes, and yes. I look at, you know, are they archetypes, you know, yeah. are they metaphors, allegories, whatever, you know, what are they? And that's, I don't know, I mean, I can blame it on me being on the spectrum, but I don't know why it is, but I always look at things and I see that, and I try to link things, and I can't help, you know, because everything is connected, although, you know, my job's trying to tell me, no, sometimes things are not. It's like I haven't found a thing yet that's not connected, you know. But maybe that's me. But my point, you know, it goes back to what you were saying. Okay, so what are our systems of governance going to be? And, you know, I wanted to laugh, too. That's another reason I was stifling a chuckle, is when you said that the City Club had made inquiries into the communities of color. I think you meant to say gauged, but you said gouged.
Gouged,
or at least that's
right,
what I
right.
heard.
Yes,
and I thought
right.
that
yeah.
was appropriate in some yeah. sense,
yes,
you know, because it. All they're doing is going in and grabbing yes. a handful. They don't really
right.
care. No, they don't care if they hurt somebody. You know, it's not really a sincere
Freudian
effort.
Slip, right.
You
yeah.
know, and so here we are trying to just shape some kind of ideology or some type of system of governance, and I go back, what are going to be the safeguards against abuse of power? What are going to be the gates to power, the accesses to power? Are we going to be honest about our nature, or are we going to act like we don't do the same thing over and over and build the same kind of system of power?
Right, exactly, exactly. Well, you are listening to KBOO More Talk Radio with Celeste, and I am Cecil. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We invite your wisdom to share with us.
Vote on one. You know, not all three. You can talk about the Oscars. You can talk about our form of local government, and then you can just talk about the fact that we're in eternal imperial overreach.
Let's go to Corey, who has been waiting. Good morning.
Good morning, Corey.
Good morning, guys. How you guys doing? This is Corey, the guy from Houston that likes to call you guys.
Well, thank you for calling from Houston.
Yeah. To your point about having to deal with, people having to confront and deal with things, last semester I got in trouble because I teach, one of the classes I teach is race and crime. And trouble being a relative term, when we were talking about the past and talking about, the slave patrols, and I asked a student, what was slavery about? And then this one student said, it's about states' rights. I'm like, okay, well, the right to do what? Well, the right to be sovereign. I'm like, no, the right to own slaves. From that point on, the student went to the chair. The chair went to the dean. I can't now, this is the thing, I'm a person of color. When I said that it was about the right to own slaves, the student became upset. So when we talk about people having to confront, I'm dealing with a generation of students right now that don't even, they understand history, but when you try to confront them with the pains of what slavery means to me, or with some, when I mentioned the Confederate flag, I'm like, that's just like a swastika to me. Yeah. No, it's different. It's a rebel flag. I'm like, well, why can't you understand that? To me, you might think that's a rebel flag, but I think it means the same thing as a swastika. But the fact is, even the power structure, the dean and the chair, can you be more sensitive? I'm like,
can you be more sensitive to what, Corey, to the fact that this student is trying to tell you that it wasn't about owning human beings?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So basically, you want me to teach, like, if you want to ask me and pay me to teach race and crime, I'm going to teach race and crime. And don't sit here and tell me how to teach. But even beyond the student, you have power structures, you have deans and chairs that don't want to deal with this. Right. And my thing is that you sit here and you talk about critical thinking, the school itself.
Yes.
But when I try to make the students think critically, I get slapped on the hand. So you can't have one or the other. It was the same thing when I taught at another school in Portland. It rhymes with Smyrna specific. I don't know if this when I taught there. You want me to teach these students to engage and to think critically to a certain point.
To a degree. Right.
And I think that's America in a whole. Are we ever going to deal with this stuff? Well, no, because people don't want to be made to feel uncomfortable. When I mentioned genocide, when I say, well, what happened to Native Americans with genocide? Well, Native Americans are still here. I'm like, well, do you know what the word genocide means? Yeah, they're still here. Where? I mean, some students don't want to confront that. And the funny part is, it's not just white students. I have had a lot of black students that have never. I just hit 40 in January 3rd. But there are students, these younger than me that just don't want to confront the pain of, look, I understand that you have friends that might be white, they might let you in their house, but, there's still stuff there that you need to understand if you're going to navigate this world. And even those students of color don't want to deal with that either. So I think we still have a long way to go because in a lot of ways, ignorance is bliss, and we have a lot of blissful people in this country.
Hey, Corey. I really appreciate the work you and people like you who are doing, who are pushing back against that powerful, powerful, powerful force that, as you can see, is not something that's only for the powerful, but how it's influenced the young and the resistance you face from the power structure that you are a part of.
Thank you. And when they say structural racism, it is the structure. That is the very structure that we're having to fight, because when you have a student that can go to the dean and complain, because they feel uncomfortable, well, that's a bigger problem.
Well, you know, what bothers me, and this, again, is that whole idea of having a system that holds us accountable. Was the student willing or even able to articulate why they felt they were uncomfortable and then have that held to scrutiny? Or was there no conversation beyond the fact that my life was threatened? I felt like my life was threatened.
Well, what they did is I'm a big fan of bell hooks. So when the student was the female began to cry, yes, I ignored the student. And that really, how dare you ignore, I'm crying. How come
you didn't start crying too?
I should have.
You should have evoked ancestors. You know, invoked. Exactly. You should have invoked ancestors who you felt the weight of bearing on you spiritually, that you wouldn't speak the truth of their being just, you know, maligned, mistreated.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and just like, what is her name? Oh, she's the one that came up with Dr. Joy Leary, post-traumatic slave syndrome. Yeah. I would have said, you know, you know, because, you know, I'm beginning to think sometimes that conversation is rarely communication, is more performance art. Because people, and I say art generously, you know, like people just don't want to hear the fact that, look, this thing called truth, there's not a whole bunch of different versions of it. There's just the aspects of it we don't want to look at. So rather than say this is part of truth, we go, that's an aspect or a version of truth. You know, that's your truth. Yeah. And, you know, and I don't like hearing, well, that's her truth or my truth or his truth or their truth. It's like, no, there's truth with pieces in it we just don't want to deal with.
Exactly, and I have the empathy. I am not a female, but I can empathize with a woman going through childbirth, but yet you can't empathize with me being a black male in front of a sea of white students, and yet you're crying, and yet you want me to stop. Mm-hmm. And I think that was also a bone of contention. When I didn't stop, that was something. And when I began crying, he didn't stop the class. Mm-hmm. So there's also a power dynamic.
Right, yes. Right.
As a white female, that I did something wrong. I should have stopped everything that I'm doing and been quite benevolent to her pain.
You didn't have a choice, because if you had stopped, then the question would have been, why did you focus on me?
Exactly, it's a lose-lose.
So you just start crying, too.
That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, just let some tears run through your face and put that quaver in your... Well, you don't have to put a quaver in your voice, because the moment you start thinking about parents...
I grew up in the church.
The moment you feel that, you know, it gets real, because I can't think of the stuff that's happened in family without getting teary.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. But I really appreciate listening to you guys every Monday, even though and we're thinking about moving back to Portland. We don't know yet. We know we're leaving Houston once I'm done, but we're thinking about heading back to Portland, but we're still kind of up in the air. But
first before you move back, unless you got family here.
Things have changed. So we were there in
Mason. Oh, her lot.
I really appreciate you guys.
No, thank you so much, Corey.
Thank you, Corey. Very much appreciated that call. Reminded me, I happened to see Just Mercy on the movie with Michael B. Jordan and Jamie Foxx. On Brian, what's his name, the lawyers? Brian.
Okay. I'm trying to get my mind to go there, but it's...
Brian, okay. You know, the lawyer who wrote the book, Just Mercy, who, you know, it talks about the death penalty and
mm-hmm.
his work advocating for the release of those unjustly imprisoned and sentenced to death penalty in the work of... to free those. A very powerful movie, and it came to my mind as Corey was speaking about slavery, because slavery didn't change, it just took on another form.
Yes.
And that's the injustice system, not fair system that we live under.
Not trying to be fair. Mm-hmm. Well, that goes back to questions about what kind of governance system do we want here in Portland, You know, mm-hmm. have we outlived and outgrown the usefulness of the system we have now? Is there a better system at work? Maybe some other cities, large cities, relatively successful cities, I'll put that out as a condition, you know, have a system that you think would be better, and you could describe that. I mean, there's the having a strong mayor as manager, you know. I have some issues with the way the city has been disingenuous in implying that it really wants to work with communities of color and then turns around and kind of hogties people when they enter into the system to try to work with them, you know. And I say that as one who worked for the municipality for 13 years.
Many years, yeah. And, you know, the form of government we have for those outside is a commissioner's form of government. Mm-hmm. Is the probably the largest city without
a strong mayor,
without mm-hmm. Council members elected by district, mm-hmm. Which the argument is that when you don't have that, the power structure is such that it's very difficult for people who aren't already part of the power structure to gain access. So
yes.
when you don't have district representation, those with the most money usually win the race because it's a citywide race. And
well, you know, even when you do have district representation, is not just about representation. Mm-hmm. It really has to do with how people can be held accountable.
Yes.
You know, and you can have citywide elections and, you can have this seeming citywide accountability system, you know, but if you have district representation and a system of district accountability, maybe people can find that they are better able to get the results they need, and you don't have local government disinvesting in certain parts of the city. Or, you know, squeezing out little tidbits here and there. And having lived in East Portland for the first 20 years of me being here, and then having worked in East Portland for my last years with the city, I can tell you that's one area mm-hmm. that really feels the sting.
Yes,
and while it is our most diverse part of the city, it is also one of, if not the most neglected parts of the city, with the idea that the folks, in terms of services, in terms of infrastructure,
yeah.
In terms of representation,
and
in terms of keeping people accountable. Paved roads, street lights, sidewalks, sewers, and then we all pay into TriMet, you know, and those of you who have run your own business or work, you know, as a sole proprietor like I have, you know, you find that out when you're paying your taxes and you say, oh, I got to pay for TriMet too.
Yes.
You know, yes, you do. And yet we don't have adequate bus service out to and back and forth into the city. And you know, some people say, well, you know, that's because you're poor and your poor butt got pushed out by the market forces, you know, AKA gentrification. Okay, that may well be, but, you know, then do your own work, you know, and we'll move jobs out here too. But no, it's not like that. And I have a friend who's also in social service who's complained that trying to get care for kids of color was once you are not part of that system, you can't get anything done. And if you are part of the system, there's certain things you can do.
Right.
So if you need lunches, clothes, you know, TriMet passes and whatever else, maybe you won't get them because you're not part of that familiar system.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's get back to conversation.
Jess Mercy. And the author is Brian Brian Stevenson.
There you go. Our phone number is 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. 1-800-273-8787. And maybe you don't want to talk about what governance system we ought to have here in Portland. And maybe you don't want to talk about the madness of ongoing and eternal war. Maybe you want to talk about the fact that The Joker, among other movies, is part of the still white Oscars.
Yeah.
Or even the fact that The Joker was nominated.
Yeah.
I mean, that says a lot.
I think 11 nominations for that film.
I don't watch them anymore because sometimes I don't subject myself to needless feelings of futility.
Yeah.
But I'm always fascinated by what movies get nominated and what actors get nominated.
So give us a call, 503-231-8187. And earlier, as we were talking, you just mentioned the form of government and mm-hmm. here in Portland. And you just made reference to, you know, types of movies and how I'm reading maybe a little something into it. You know, some movies aren't inspiring or things like that. And we can look at our form of government as not inspiring, you know, whether the national government or local government. And I came across an editorial by the former executive director of Street Roots, who wrote in the magazine, now the newspaper Street Roots, an editorial on Nick Fish, who was a commissioner here in Portland, city commissioner, who died a few days ago, whose absence will be significant. What I found, you know, of significance of Commissioner Fish was, and reading and hearing a lot of things over the last few days, just remembering that here was someone who was a scion of a prominent Republican family in New York. His father was a congressman. His grandfather was prominent. His father was one of the Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee who voted for the impeachment of Richard Nixon many, many years ago. But Israel wrote a very moving reflection on Nick Fish. And it says something about maybe how we should begin to attack some of these issues that we face. And I'll read it just in part. He said, in 2015, when it was clear that Portland was going to move forward with a housing bond, Nick worked tirelessly with advocates and Housing Commissioner Dan Salzman to make it happen. I'll never forget Nick trying to facilitate a public partnership with Street Roots and the Portland Business Alliance. Street Roots had openly battled with the business group for more than a decade over the criminalization of the homeless. At times, it got nasty. It was fair to say we didn't like each other all that much. I told him such an alliance would be a disaster for Street Roots and advocates, knowing that many other organizations and allies on the left wouldn't take kindly to such a partnership. Of course, Nick reminded me that it's better to be called a sellout and have built thousands of affordable housing units for people than to be popular on the left and have not built any at all. It was just one example how Nick's mind worked. While many people in the room were arguing about politics or posturing for the next move, Nick was thinking six moves ahead. In the end, Nick taught us that sometimes the fight was less important than the outcome. There's no elected official who cared about bringing people together across different political spectrums to work towards doing good for the community, be it our parks, the arts, or working with the immigrant and refugee community, to name a few. Nick was always there. Nick never put his own political ambitions before the people, something that is very rare in politics. Nick truly believed in the idea that government should play a role in creating the best public infrastructure possible for our community and our world. reflection by Israel Beyer on Commissioner Nick Fish, who died a few days ago. Reflection about who we ought to be or aspire to be. Our number's here, 503-231-8187. And we have Pear.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Pear.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Oh, pretty good, up and about.
Good.
You're talking about city governance, and I don't know, for some reason, Harold Washington popped into my mind.
Mm. Mm. Former governor, no, not governor, mayor of Chicago.
Chicago. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, what would
Chicago
remind you?
I think he had about 40 different wards and aldermen and all kinds of stuff. But
yeah.
He was a very successful mayor, but then he died too soon.
All right. Why was he successful, do you think?
Well, I don't know. I try to find out more about him, but my mm-hmm. impression was that he represented a lot of people, not just black people, but he just kind of he connected with people. And this at the same time, when Fred Hampton was organizing different gangs. He was organizing a kind of a coming together of the white gangs and the Puerto Rican gangs and the African American gangs, and he was kind of forging this kind of a consensus of people who were being basically screwed by the system.
Now Fred Hampton, of course, was assassinated way before Harold Washington
yeah.
became mayor in the 80s.
Okay.
But Fred Hampton, but here was someone who I think of type of character who was seeking to bring together different forces. I think that's a point, that very powerful point you're making. And interestingly enough, Fred Hampton, 21 years old, was killed by the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
And Mayor Washington, who was bringing together communities, how large and disparate communities there are in Chicago. He was trying to bring together lots of communities together and work for progressive change. And I think he would Mayor Washington died from health issues, but still, the cost of seeking good may cost you your life.
I'd like to know more about him. It'd be worth doing a program sometime.
Okay. Well, we'll put that on the list.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you, Pierre. Our number's here, 503-231-8187. Yeah. If you can make Chicago work, maybe you can make Portland work.
Well, one of the things that makes Chicago kind of a difficult place to work in is all of it's a lot older city, mm-hmm. and it has a layered history, and it also has kind of this interesting meta history. At least I look at it as a meta history. I might be the only one, but I remember recognizing this that when I was younger, is that you have a history in Chicago that's kind of a combination of glitz and gangster.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You have the powers that be are not only high society and esteemed intellectuals, but it has a strong gangster undercurrent as one of its roots.
Uh-huh.
And so you look at how does that affect bringing people together? Because it's going to bring people from all areas, from all ethnicities, from all nationalities into the city, but not necessarily for the same aim.
Certainly.
And so then it seems like you have a strong oppositional force that, while it might bring people, it might draw people, it also holds certain folks with different ideologies or economic, backgrounds or you know, politics apart.
And one thing that about the city of Chicago is much larger,
much larger,
and much more diverse. But also, you know, as you suggested, the different communities. So you have the alderman structure representing those communities, and somehow finding a way to work together. Yeah. Also, you know, was founded by Jean-Baptiste Pointe du Soleil, a black man.
Well, not just black, though.
Well,
not just of African ancestry, but that name implies that he had at least a passing association with French nationality.
Yes.
You know, so that's a whole different form of government as well. Well, anyway.
See, you gain from listening to More Talk Radio on Mondays on KBOO.
Your community connection, I might add.
That's right. Hey, community, let's talk to Robbie, who's on the line. Good morning, Robbie.
Good morning, Robbie. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for having this this wonderful topic here. I don't mean to shift gears too much. When I started listening to the program, we were talking about the endless wars. I watched the Democracy Now! Segment. Here's, you know, a lot of people give Trump... Okay, I'm a person that believes in the powers that be, and I hate Trump as much as the next person. You know, I do consider myself very left, but ultimately I see the money behind him. And one thing that they were talking about was the alligator that, you know, that jumped out of the swamp and bit him.
Bit him.
He did promise. Yeah. I mean, and so you're right to a degree. He wasn't seduced by the war because he is an individual that would, you know, we would all expect to do that. But I think that the people, the powers that be, put Donald Trump into this position. So, when I see, and I think one of the dangerous things about Donald Trump right now is there's a lot of Democrats who are like, well, anybody but Trump, 2020, you know, and I didn't vote for Obama. I was an activist with Dakota Access Pipeline, Black Lives Matter, Occupy Wall Street. All that happened under Obama. You know, I can't, and to this day, I'm actually proud that I didn't vote for him because, you know, fast forward 8 years later, you know, everything that I knew about his, you know, policies were exactly what I thought they were. And I can't bring myself to vote for something like that. Even if we say that there's somebody worse, and I think that we're in a pretty dangerous situation now because, you know, there are individuals who would not end the endless wars. A lot of people
would not because, you know, it makes money.
Exactly. And that's particularly with Warren, Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, Joe Biden. Obviously, all of those people want, they've all voted to increase Trump's military budget, which tells me that they're coming from the same pocket or at least the same control of the world finances that, you know, ultimately controls, you know, America and the world for that part. But I just wanted to mention a lot, you know, with this Iran situation right now, Jeffrey Alexander Sterling was a whistleblower who he came out and he's arrested under Obama, but he came out and said that we were giving Iran nuclear secrets, and the part of the reason for it was to create this conflict. One of the things that they said that they were giving him was these Iranian nuclear secrets, which were fatal, which were supposed to, you know, blow up in their face. And to a degree they did, but other people are speculating that it actually increased and sped up their production of, you know, enriching uranium or whatever it is that they do for the weapons. But do you know who Wesley Clark is, the old Democratic candidate?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
General Wesley Clark came out in, 2008 or 2010, and had this really wonderful interview where he was talking about the plan. He said, you know, because he was trying to stop the war in Iraq, from what he was talking about. He said he didn't want to deal with it. And he said that his aides came up to him and they were like, hey, you know, they're doing this war with Iraq. And then he was like, what? And then he explained that, and basically to almost a fine print, he details the exact plan that's what's happened in the past 15 years from when he got interviewed. He said, first they're going after Iraq, then it's Libya, and then it's going to be, I forget, but then it ends in Iran. Syria was the other one.
Syria.
And so basically, when you look at the military complex industry's plan, it's gone exactly as planned.
That's right. Yeah. And so it's working just right.
And that's what a lot of people need to recognize. Yeah.
Right.
You know.
Well, I'll finish it with this, but I just wanted to say that when I look at this, I feel like Donald Trump's the perfect person for them to start World War III, and everybody would believe it's just Donald Trump and not America, you know?
Well, he was put in place. I agree with you. He was put in this position. And if we're going to be naive to think he was voted in, you know, then we deserve whatever system we get. I may not agree with everything you said, but what you do is you bring up points that we can see for the most part. All we have to do is just be honest and look at the situation and look at what motivates people, you know, and people at certain levels are motivated by money and power.
Yeah.
And it's not deep.
Much.
Thank you.
Thank you so
I'll
much.
I'll take my answers. I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, thank you, Robbie. Thank you for sharing the information
and for the comments.
And the comments. Mm-hmm. Our number's here, 503-231-8187. Stay tuned for following More Talk Radio. Is the OMO Variety Hour right here on your local station. But before that, let's talk to LJ. Good morning, LJ.
Good morning, LJ.
Hey, Happy New Year, you guys.
Happy 2024, Sight.
2020, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know that you're an ex-New Yorker. Right? So what I have to bring up was there was a mayor in New York, John Lindsay.
Yes, 65.
You remember John Lindsay?
Yes. Yes, first elected in 1965, reelected in 1969. He ran for mayor, ran for president in 1972 as a Democrat.
I don't know how you remember all
I know,
of those
some
facts.
Things, yeah.
I'm impressed.
But ask
anyway,
me where are my keys. But go ahead, LJ.
Any which way, John Lindsay started the City University of New York's open enrollment and free tuition program.
Yep.
Which allowed students from who graduated from high school to enter the college system.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't need a grade point average. They didn't have to have yada 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 yada, and it opened up the educational system to all kinds of folks, especially colored folks and and Latinos.
Okay. You know, I love what you said, but it's how you said it that made me cringe. You know, the new word for something being, you know, a little painful socially or politically is cringy, and I totally get it. Say people of color.
No, he meant black folks.
Sorry.
I know
I'm
you
right.
meant black folks.
Because he said
colored,
Latinos.
Okay, but you know, just say people of color, and you're covered for
okay.
you know.
Okay.
You
I
know, I understand it's a generational thing, and so I'm not upset. I'm not mad.
I stand corrected. I stand corrected.
But
anyway, this opens up the educational process. For high school students,
right?
Who would have never had an opportunity otherwise.
And also, you know, John Lindsay was a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Too, but,
yes,
you know.
He was a Republican.
Yes.
And I took advantage of that system.
Good.
And I actually made $1,400 a year going to school.
Okay. Well, see, you know, back in the late 60s, early to middle 70s is when we had a gigantic push for middle class and whites and people of color from all economic levels, you know, being able to access higher education. And so even as a Republican, I'm sure he looked at that and realized that that could only profit the economy as well as our, you know, societal structure, our infrastructure by having better educated people out here. And so I applaud his foresight. I applaud your foresight, and I wish we could get some more foresight here in 2020.
Hey, thank you, LJ, for sharing. And
nothing to it.
All right.
And as always, you guys are right on the money.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And one last thing about John Lindsay. He was a Republican, but when he ran for re-election, he mm-hmm. was defeated in the Republican primary, maybe because he was not Republican enough.
That's what we would call a moderate or a centrist Republican nowadays.
Is there
a moderate Republican nowadays? There must be.
There must be.
Because there's some speaking out against Trump.
Yeah. Who?
Well, not against him wholesale, but against some of his actions. Like, you know, the fact that we had a couple of Republicans, and I wish I could remember his name because I was reading the article last night, that was complaining about how he did not give enough information. He didn't give enough information in the national security briefing, but went on the Laura Ingraham show and just spilled all these beans. That was a Republican who said that, and his name will come to me later.
But in the meantime, let's talk to Hossein.
Yes, hello, how are you?
We are fine. How are you doing, Hossein?
I'm doing good. I have two things to say.
Okay.
One is that, and they're both very appropriate. One is that right now is a lot of talk about Iran, and you guys and everybody else, you say Iran. There's no country in the world named Iran.
Yes, Iran.
You are very educated. You guys are teachers, and you're broadcasting. Iran.
We even have it in our newsroom to say Iran, and I'm sorry. That's all I could say.
Iran, Iraq, you know, people can then. My wife is driving me crazy. She says that why can't these people pronounce it correctly? Okay, that's one. Second one is that there's this notion that just let's get everybody elected instead of Trump.
Right.
We had this problem in Iran mm-hmm. when we kicked Shah out, and we were trying to get a secular government there, a people's government, and the notion was that, no, let's get rid of Shah, and then we talk.
Mm-hmm.
We resisted that a long time, but then the population gave in. And see what we got. We got what the Shah had sought. They breathed the Islamic Republic. No, I think it's right now is the right time to select the right candidate. Not just to get rid of Trump,
yes.
to get the right candidate. Otherwise, we will be back in the same boat right after the election, because we just got a Democrat.
Good point, Hossein. One of the problems we have in this country is we will not push back when we hear a false narrative. So we're giving this false narrative that says anybody but Trump, which is the rallying cry that was used last time, like lesser of two evils, when there are choices. That's a false dichotomy or a false choice. You know, there are more choices than this, but we want to focus as though this is the only solution to the problem. And we have to push back on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And no censorship. We should not come and say, hey, when he talks about socialism and we should not talk about socialism. No. We should talk about the issues that he brings up.
Mm-hmm.
If you call him socialism, you call him capitalism, anything you want. If it's right for the people, for the country, that's what we're going to go behind.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for your
thank
help.
You.
Bye.
Goodbye now. We have to do a lot more, not only investigation, but as Hossein and you said, move beyond the what we might think is an easy response, like anybody but,
mm-hmm.
and look at what these people are advocating for.
Yeah, because we don't want anybody but. I mean, if Jeff Bezos stepped into the political fray and claimed to be a progressive or a green or independent, you wouldn't necessarily jump on him.
No.
And, you know, so we got to be more discerning and push back. And one way to be more discerning and push back is to listen to and support your community connection, KBOO Portland. We are unencumbered media. Yes, we may say things that seem like they are on the extreme level of progressive information, but sometimes that is just simply the truth with more of the parts that we don't want to look at Remember that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, support us. You can support us not only by listening, but becoming a member and a financial supporter. Go to our website, kboo.fm, and become a member and supporter. But never, never, never stop listening to your community connection. Here in Portland is 90.7 FM. In the Dalles and White Salmon, Washington, it is 91.9. In Point South, it is 104.3 FM. KBOO.FM everywhere.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society 2019-20 concert season. Kate Lee and Forrest O'Connor kick off 2020 on Friday, January 17th. They are co-lead singers and primary songwriters for the Grammy Award-winning O'Connor Band. That's Kate Lee and Forrest O'Connor, Friday, January 17th at 7:30 p.m., doors at 7, at the Reedwood Friends Church, 2901 Southeast Steel Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland unless otherwise noted. The Personnel Governance Committee will meet on Wednesday, January 15th at 5 p.m.